This is The Guardian.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Science Weekly is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honor of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organization, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
This is late 2016, and diplomats and other officials at the US Embassy in Havana start coming down with a mystery affliction.
That's The Guardian's World Affairs editor, Julian Borgia. He's been following the strange story of Havana syndrome since the beginning.
And they start hearing strange clicking, grating noises that seem to be coming at them from a specific direction.
For some of those affected, the impact is devastating.
They start to experience a wide range of really troubling symptoms. Dizziness, nausea, severe headaches, in some cases, crippling symptoms.
Since 2016, hundreds of cases have been reported, mostly among US officials posted abroad. But we're no closer to understanding what caused it. Theories range from an episode of mass hysteria to brain damage caused by targeted attacks with a secret microwave weapon. But could there be another explanation?
There's a third box here, which is a functional disorder, which is a real illness occurring in the brain from altered brain function.
So in the week that two new studies of Havana syndrome patients appear to find no evidence of brain injury, we're asking, what could be behind this mysterious condition? And will we ever know what really happened? I'm The Guardian's science editor, Ian Sample, and this is Science Weekly. Julian, have you ever spoken to anyone who was affected by Havana syndrome? Did they talk about what they were doing at the time? And how did they describe what happened to them, the circumstances and so on?
Yes, I talked to a former senior CIA official, Mark Polymeropoulos, who was struck down by something during a visit to Moscow. He woke up after staying the night in a Moscow hotel room, and he was unable to stand. He felt dizzy, felt like the room was spinning, and he has, for years after, suffered from crippling migraines that stopped him working, stopped him being able to function properly. And he is absolutely convinced that he was targeted while he was in Moscow on a visit that they had alerted the Russian authorities about to the Moscow station.
Since 2016, there's been a lot of speculation about what could have caused this. Take me through some of the theories today, and has there been any evidence for any of those?
Included in the various theories, the most popular in terms of a weapon is some kind of directed energy weapon. And there has been some debate among engineers over whether this is feasible. They've also talked about, could it be toxins? And of course, on the other end of the spectrum, the suggestion that it is psychogenic, that this is, you know, ultimately springs from the mind, from stress, from the expectation that it could happen to you once the initial cluster of cases came to light.
Is there any sense of what impact it had on people's lives generally after sort of experiencing this?
Many of the people afflicted had to give up their jobs because they were no longer able to function properly. Long-term fatigue, loss of balance, really punishing headaches that made it impossible to continue in their jobs. So these are really serious symptoms. And so that is why when reports that have come out in the past suggesting it's something, you know, psychogenic, it is deeply upsetting to this group of people because symptoms are so life-changing.
Julian, in 2019, there was a team at the University of Pennsylvania who published this study that seemed to show differences in the white matter volume, tissue integrity in the cerebellum, and functional connectivity in nerve networks in people who were reporting these issues at the embassy in Havana. That was compared with a sort of a control group of healthy people. This week, you wrote about these two new studies that were looking at signs of any sort of biological basis for Havana syndrome. What were those papers actually looking at?
One of the papers was looking at changes in brain structure, so using MRIs. And the other were using different tests for functional impairment. They were also looking at biomarkers in blood samples, auditory testing, and cognitive testing. And both those studies found no discernible physical differences between those people who have been afflicted by the symptoms known as Havana syndrome and a sample group that was comparable in age and profession. And so that went against those initial findings from the University of Pennsylvania.
So, Julian, what do these scientists conclude from their studies, these tests and these scans? I mean, if everything they looked at looked sort of physiologically normal, what happens next?
Well, they went out of their way to say that doesn't mean that the symptoms aren't real. It just means they do not appear to be related to anything that can be observable through MRIs and through these tests that they ran. They went out of their way to say that they weren't saying that these people in any way were making it up, but suggested maybe, you know, it was a functional complaint rather than one that was triggered by a physical change.
So if Havana syndrome is possibly a functional neurological disorder, what exactly does that mean?
It's where patients present with neurological symptoms like seizures or limb weakness or numbness and dizziness, which is where it becomes relevant to this. And it's occurring not because of a structural brain disease that you can see on a scan or test like MS or epilepsy, but instead it's occurring because there's a problem with the software of the nervous system, the way the brain is working.
This is John Stone, a consultant neurologist and honorary professor at the University of Edinburgh, who specializes in functional neurological disorders.
It's something that would have been called psychosomatic in the past, In the 19th century, people might have called it hysteria. But in the last few years, we've come to a different appreciation of this condition as one that is something between neurology and psychiatry, between the brain and the mind, so not just a psychological condition.
And what did you make of these most recent studies that came out looking at people with Havana syndrome?
Well, I was really pleased to see them because what's been done at the National Institute of Health is a really thorough look at, you know, lots of these patients. I don't know how many there are in total, but they managed to get, I think it was 86. And they didn't find any evidence of a structural brain problem, structural brain damage. But what they found would be in keeping with what perhaps I thought they might find, which is that there's a mixture of problems going on, that some people have migraine, some people have a condition called triple PD, and it's a type of chronic dizziness.
Okay, so persistent postural perceptual dizziness, or triple PD, is one of these functional disorders you're talking about. In this latest work, 24 of the 80 or so Havana syndrome patients were diagnosed with functional disorders, primarily this condition, triple PD. What might cause it?
Usually what happens is that there is a more identifiable event at the beginning, which might be a minor head injury or an episode of vertigo from a viral infection or something like that, which is alarming and surprising to the person. But when that problem settles down, instead of the brain adapting back to normal health, the brain is stuck in a state as if the dizziness trigger is still happening. When I meet someone with triple PD in my clinic, they're normally at their wit's end because they are just consumed by dizziness. Wherever they go, they're feeling like they're on a boat. The dizziness has taken over their life. So it's a good example of how you very commonly get a functional disorder triggered by a minor different event. Yeah, so it's a common condition and also potentially treatable and based on this same idea of a software problem of the brain rather than a hardware one.
So given what we know, and you know, obviously there's plenty we don't know right now, but what we do know so far, I mean, do you think functional neurological disorders could be a good explanation for what we're seeing in these people? And have you got any thoughts on what might have been that triggering event?
I think it was always a possibility based on the description of the symptoms I was hearing. One of the things that I was particularly struck by was that the patients, and this was in the original report, that many of the patients described symptoms that got worse over time. Now, that simply doesn't make sense or stack up when you're thinking about a brain injury, because we know if you have an injury, then the symptoms are worst at the time of the injury, and then they slowly improve, and they might plateau, but they don't get worse over time. So getting worse over time is typical of a functional disorder. We know that functional disorders are usually triggered by some unusual sensory experience. And talking to people who know about directed energy weapons, I understand that it's much easier to produce an abnormal or unpleasant sensory experience from a distance than it is to actually cause brain damage. It was the causing brain damage that was really very difficult for people to understand. But so it is possible, I think, that a device could cause an unpleasant sensory experience from a distance. It wouldn't cause brain damage, but it'd be enough to trigger a functional disorder. I don't think that sort of third option has been particularly thought about. But I just think we desperately need to destigmatize and understand these conditions as genuine medical conditions that happen to anyone.
Julian, do those afflicted by this have their own thoughts on what happened? Have they got their own, have they sort of reached a consensus of their own, do you think?
A large number of them are convinced that they were targeted because they were working for the US government, and that the intelligence community that they once belonged to has been covering it up, that the intelligence community knows more about what happened to them than they are letting on, and for various reasons is keeping it secret.
And have any of those theories been debunked or ruled out by now?
Nothing's been completely ruled out. It's very hard to proven negative in these cases, but certainly they have found, or at least they're, as far as they're publicly admitting, have found no evidence that some kind of secret weapon wielded by a hostile power was involved.
And how seriously do you think the US government is taking Havana Syndrome today? Are they still looking into it, or have they basically just sort of pushed it to one side?
Well, they continue to insist they are looking into it, continuing to research it, because it is a very, very sensitive issue. And it is affecting the willingness of young recruits to those agencies to go out into the field. And the government, after quite a slow start, has been at pains to show that A, it's carrying on with the research, and B, that it is properly looking after people who've been affected by the syndrome.
Julian, just finally, how do you see all this sort of wrapping up? Do you think we will get an answer? Do you think these people will get the answers that they're looking for?
It's really hard to say. I mean, in a way, both answers seem far-fetched. One, that the idea that there is this secret weapon out there that we have not yet, that the US government has not yet discovered, but that can cause these terrible symptoms, that seems far-fetched. But on the other hand, the idea that diplomats and spies would be laid low by a psychogenic illness that affected such a large number of government employees, that sounds far-fetched as well. So it does remain a real mystery to this day, and it's hard to say whether they will ultimately ever really get to the bottom of it.
Thanks again to John Stone and Julian Borgia. You can find all of Julian's reporting on this story at theguardian.com. And before you go, a reminder to check out The Guardian's series on artificial intelligence. It's called Black Box, and each episode follows a different story. The final episode of the series is out today, and it's asking, could AI be the end of humanity? Not necessarily. Search and subscribe to Black Box wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by Holly Fisher. The sound design was by Tony Onochuku. And the executive producer is Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Tuesday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.